Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. Join Heritage Foods USA this November. Reserve your heritage turkey today. Loved by all our chefs and customers for their unbeatable flavor. Visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985 to order yours. That's 718-389-0985.
Everybody, you're tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about making money, spending it, saving it. What did I say?
What to do with it when you got it? I don't know.
Wow.
I did it better last week, Jack.
No.
Just play over what I did last week. I think we'll be good.
Making it, spending it, saving it. What to do with it when you get it. I had a little blip there. And I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, with my co-host, Andrew, my son, it's his birthday, Newman.
There it is. Thank you, Jack.
It's official. Today is the day. How many years ago, Drew?
Oh, shut up.
Do you want to tell the world?
No, it's okay.
Oh, he's going to keep that number a secret.
I'm very sensitive about my age.
Oh, modest.
Don't ask me my age or my weight. I'm very sensitive about these things.
Oh, go away. All right.
I'm like a woman sometimes. You know, we all have our points of contention.
I don't have a problem telling you my age. My birthday is 27 days away.
How old are you going to be?
I'm going to be 57 in 27 days.
And how much do you weigh?
How much do I weigh? I weigh about 135 pounds.
Nice.
Not bad.
And your shoe size?
8. I got all those numbers down. Okay, so today I want to just acknowledge that my beloved producer, engineer, Jack Inslee, and the one and only Carlos are in the house.
Hey, thanks.
And today...
Happy birthday, Andrew.
Thank you, Jack. Carlos. Let me hear you, Carlos. Carlos.
Happy birthday.
Atta boy, Carlos. Thank you, buddy.
All right. No singing on this show. Only me. All right. Today's show is creative and financially successful. We're going to get to that. But first, let's finish up some housekeeping. We broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. You can call in while we're streaming. You can call us at
718-497-2128.
He's got those numbers down too.
718-497-2128.
Or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com
we'll
read your comments or questions on the air. And let's tell everybody to call in to wish Andrew a happy birthday on the air.
Oh, please.
That'd be cool.
That would be the first phone call I got today about my birthday. That and my grandma called me today.
Oh, good.
And all she did was argue with me.
Oh, wait, we got a call. See, we got a call. Let's see who's on the phone. Hello.
Hey, it's Timmy.
There it is. I knew it was going to be Timmy.
Timmy.
Happy birthday, brother.
Thank you, Timmy.
Timmy, you're like one of our loyalist callers. You know that?
I listen every week. What can I say?
We want to thank you for being such a good listener and a great caller.
How is Haley?
Oh, thanks.
Is she okay? Is she home yet?
He's 30, by the way.
Shut up, Timmy.
He's 30.
Shut
I know.
Up.
I remember.
Why are you letting out the bag?
I was there 30 years ago. I knew that.
How's Haley? Did Haley get home yet?
Listen, can we talk about this after?
Come on! All right, Tim, we got to go. I'll call you later.
Well, go to talk. Thanks for calling, Timmy. All right, let's get back to the show. So today we have a very, very special guest.
Can I tell you about Grandma? All she did after she wished me a happy birthday and told me she loved me was yell at me about Occupy Wall Street. 5 minutes of Grandma yelling about Occupy Wall Street.
You know, she doesn't bring it up to me at all.
Doesn't understand it. She's like, these people need to get jobs. Your grandfather worked six jobs his whole life. And they took 50% of his money. Okay. And I try to explain to her.
We're not talking about Occupy today. We got a very special, on your very special day, we got our very special guest and friend, our man Doug Bube. Hi, Doug.
Hey.
Oh, Doug's here. Doug's
happy birthday.
House.
Thank you, Doug.
Doug's in the house. So the reason why I brought Doug onto the show was because we talk about money here, and he's an artist. We got lots of listeners who are creative people in some form or another. But this man's going to tell you guys how he pulled it off financially and stay true to his world of being and staying in the art world, right? Is that what you did, Doug?
Sure.
Yeah. So first I want to just tell you guys, I know Doug quite a few years, but he really worked hard recently and put out this beautiful book. I want to tell everybody, first off, about this beautiful book. You call it a mono. What do you call it?
It's called an artist monograph.
A monograph. So I'm not an artist, so I don't know that. So that's a standard term in the art world.
It's a standard term when someone puts out a piece of work that's just about their work.
Ah. And so tell... So there's a lot of creative people out there listening, but then there's other people who don't know about this stuff. So tell us what this book... Why you put this out, how it happened, and tell us a little bit about the book first.
Well, the book was created, actually was inspired by a friend of mine, Mariana Wong from San Francisco, and yes. She knows of my work. And after about 10 years, she said, Doug, I want to give you an artist book. She wanted to go into publishing, which is very unusual because publishing is not doing very well right now.
It's a
shrinking business, and it's either e-books or
Well, that's a good thing about your book. You can't put that on a Kindle.
Actually, you can.
You probably can.
With a photograph.
Well, no, it has to be on a certain type of software where you can actually download images. And they're actually starting to do that, if not already.
So art books are now going on Kindles, too.
Right.
Wow.
I don't know specifically about a Kindle, but they are going to be...
On those
digitized.
Readers, e-readers.
On the readers, so you'll be able to see it, as are magazines.
Yes.
So Mariana said, I want to give you a book. She wants to start the whole new business. And I said, great. So we started this project about 6.5 years ago.
Oh, boy.
And the project was I had to scan and work. You know, it's like an independent movie that takes years
in the
making.
And it's a one-man operation. You did
it's
most of the work.
Well, Mariana actually was doing all of the scanning in, and she was doing all the design work. Unfortunately, she could not continue. And then the other person who took over a year and a half ago was... Linda Florio from Florio Design.
Oh, see.
So the initiation was because someone was inspired by the work. I would not have thought about doing this book myself. And not knowing the procedure and the financial inclination, I am glad I didn't because I probably wouldn't have started in the beginning.
Right. If you had known what you were getting into, you would have ran the other way.
Right.
Oh, let me just tell our listeners, for those who don't know the Doug Bube art world, he's a book artist. Today, you're considered a book artist.
A mixed media artist, and I use books.
Mixed media, right. Yeah. And he's had other lives. He was a photographer. I guess you still consider yourself a photographer. And you've had other things. There were things in the book that I didn't know that you did, like those army guys that were upside down and stuff. We'll talk about that
later.
So not everything is paper books, but mostly paper books and photography.
Well, that's the medium, and then the actual content of the work is social, political.
Oh, yeah, I know. Oh, we're going to talk about that, too.
What do you say to the people who love books and when they talk to you about your destruction of them?
Well, the books that I actually find are books that people have actually thrown out.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. When I first moved to Fort Greene Place, next door, someone had thrown out literally hundreds of books.
Amazing.
And today, when I go to Strand Books or flea markets, that's really where I find my books.
Uh-huh.
It's rare that I'll ever buy a new book and then... perpetrate some act against it.
Right.
Some may say it's horrific what you do with the destruction.
I think they're
Others
beautiful.
Think it's gorgeous.
I think they're so incredible.
Thanks for the compliment. The other thing, Drew, you brought up a good point, is it's not as if I'm taking a Gutenberg Bible.
No, yeah.
I'm taking books where there are hundreds of thousands of copies of these particular books.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And if we think of what is a book compared to a human spine, you know, let's be precious about human spines rather than books.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's about recycling and being green in the environment, because we have so many books that people will read and they'll just throw out. So I like to recycle in that sense.
Do you look for a specific book when doing a project, or is it not important?
Did you read my book? Because you're good.
No, I haven't actually read the book. I just saw a copy today.
I'm just teasing.
I know.
Ask me the question again.
Do you pick out specific books for a project?
Yes, quite specifically.
Okay.
Quite specifically. Sometimes I'll have an idea and then I'll want to explore it in terms of what the book is in the physical form of some visual presentation. Or I'll be walking down the street and I'll have a thought and that slot gestates itself and I begin to do research on it to make sure no one else has done it. And if they have done it, I want to push the idea as far as I can. But I'm usually inspired by certain themes and they typically be their political or social events.
And then you find a book that associates with
absolutely
that?
And it sometimes takes a long time to find that specific book because the content has to be correct within the book. Even if people are not going to read the book, essentially what I do is I deconstruct the book.
Right.
And if someone can't read it, that's okay, but if they were to separate the pages slightly, in most of my work you could actually do that gently, then you could actually see that there is content to it. So it's just a layer, although the external appearance is more visual than the content. But 99% of the time, it's important to know what book I'm using.
Okay.
Let me tell you, you called your work social. What'd you say? It was social?
Social.
I thought it was mixed media.
Well, I'm a mixed media artist, but the content may be inspired by social, political, as well as art themes.
Okay. Well, I went through the book, and these are the ideas that I came up with about the style of Doug's work. It's political. It's intelligent. It's clever. Sometimes it's whimsical. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's serious. Sometimes it's funny.
Is this going on the dust jacket at this point? Did you ask you to write this for you?
And it's always creative.
I wish I had.
I know, really.
It's always creative. That's the way I would describe your work, mm-hmm. the body of work that I saw in the book and that I know about. Because mm-hmm. I've seen it, you know, personally myself a number of times. And I've always felt that mm-hmm. those words describe your work.
I appreciate that.
No, and well... Tell me, was I wrong about anything?
No.
It was right on, right?
Yeah, Doug, tell us that you don't like what you do and that you know.
Well, what's interesting is sometimes there's some artists who are so confident about whatever they do, it doesn't matter what they do. They just know that it's going
to...
And I certainly have my doubts.
Of course.
Because I look at it as if it's not Doug Bube looking at the work, but it's another set of eyes because I want this to work independently of me.
You try to be objective about your own work.
Totally. Otherwise, it doesn't work. If it doesn't work for me, then how is it going to work for somebody else?
So you're not one of those artists who imposes your view or slant on something on the individual?
Well, I definitely editorialize what I'm looking at. But then in that editorialization of the content, I have to go so deeply into myself to figure out if this is pushing the idea both visually forward as well as, you know, conceptually. Because really, if I'm going to be interested in political social views, I really need to be a social worker or a politician. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's where you really, being a social political artist, it could be very faint because you're preaching to the converted.
Right. Uh-huh.
But I do what I do, and I feel that this is necessary, and I've had a long commitment towards doing it.
Right. Now, on another note, when I was thinking about the things about Doug. Now, I thought about Doug the artist, but then I thought about Doug the person. And these are the adjectives that I would describe mm-hmm. Doug the person.
I like this program.
I'll explain to you why I say that. Doug's adaptable. Mm-hmm. Doug's a risk taker, and Doug is confident. And that's why I believe that Doug's successful in his art and his financial world, and he was mm-hmm. able to survive, do well. He mm-hmm. did pretty well. He does pretty well mm-hmm. in his financial life to afford him the creative and the art life that he really wants to.
Doug, can I ask you a question? Is that luck, skill, or a combination of the two?
It's definitely a combination. I remember when I was in my 20s, I was offered an apprenticeship with Minor White, photographer in Boston. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to work there. And I was doing a little traveling. Was I going to go to graduate school? Because I'd already been to York University, originally from Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I thought, goodness, I met this one photographer. And his wife said, oh, well, David is downstairs in the dark room. And I'm looking at my clock. I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, it's in the afternoon. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, could I do that in my own life? And I realized that I would love just to be not at work on a job, but I'd really love to be doing my artwork in the afternoon mm-hmm. and not in the evenings or the
weekends.
Right. And that really was one of my first inspirations of saying, if I could actually do my work almost full time, what a great
career it might be.
Yeah, a totally great career.
And a life.
That's
and a great life, yes.
Yeah.
To be able to do what you love full time and doesn't feel like work anymore.
Was the impetus for you taking on this career as an artist, but what made you successful at the same time then?
Well, I think part of it is I didn't always know. I had to fall back on not being a full-time artist because no artist really knows that when you're just starting out.
No, of course not. Right.
Although some are very fortunate and begin to sell their work and they get a great deal of support from exhibitions and from the sales.
But that's not the standard.
That is not the standard.
Right.
It's a very small minority.
Right.
So I realized that I had to develop certain skills. And part of those skills were being a photographer.
Sorry, I'm just laughing about the conversation we had before, the skills you're talking about, and the logger story just jumps out into my mind. And I just
Okay, let's take a break for a minute, and let's come back and find out how Doug pulled it off from the 80s to now, working and creating simultaneously. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Makes your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day. With eyes that know the darkness in my soul, shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze.
Okay, we're back. We're speaking with Doug Bube, who's a mixed media artist and recently put out an incredibly beautiful book called... Doug, tell us what it is.
The book is called Doug Bube, Breaking the Codex, and okay. The subtitle is Bookworks, Collage, and Mixed Media.
Okay, so it is a beautiful book.
Where is it available, Doug?
It's actually available on my website. People can go to DougBube.com and then just follow the links.
How do you spell your name there, Doug?
D-O-U-G.
Oh, I got that part, but the last name is a little confusing.
I set you up for that one.
Yeah, you did. I set myself up for that one, I think.
B-E-U-B-E.
Okay.
B-E-U-B-E.
So DougBube.com.
.com.
And that's the only place it's available? Or is
no, actually, the MoMA bookstore sells it, and also Ursus Books, Printed Matter, and Amazon.
Very nice. Okay.
Good for you.
Within the city, yeah.
Okay.
But,
so,
you know, we want to funnel them to your website mostly.
You.
Yeah, of course.
I'm happy if they just sell.
Yeah. Well,
I appreciate that.
Orders anywhere. Yeah. We'll take them everywhere. So, Doug became a publisher this year, right, Doug? Are you a publisher? Well, you are
a bookseller.
Well,
actually, it's self published.
You're a bookseller this year.
Right.
But let's go back to how you launched your career and the things that you've done, because I keep telling everybody how successful you are, not only in your art, but in your financial world. So you've taken various paths, mm-hmm. and some have been really great and good decisions, and some have been okay, and some have might have made a few mm-hmm. mistakes along mm-hmm. the way. But let's start with, you got out of school, and you worked with this guy, Minor White.
Minor White was, I apprenticed to Minor White mm-hmm. The last year he was alive.
And he inspired you to become a full-time artist.
Yeah, again, as I explained, said to Drew, this other guy that, you know, before I was actually working for Minor, that someone could actually work like this all the time, full-time mm-hmm. as an artist. And Minor was doing this, again, 24/7. He was teaching at MIT, and I became his apprentice. Mm-hmm. And I worked in the darkroom, and he really taught me how to be an exceptional printer. And that's where I really learned how to do black and white printing.
Right.
And then after that, it was survival.
Right. Most creative people wind up in.
And
So what did you do right?
So after that, I went to the Midwest and I started a photography program at, it's called the Maharishi International University, and I was there for a number of years. And I realized that I needed to get a Master's of Fine Arts. If I didn't do an MFA, I couldn't legitimately get a full-time job.
Okay.
And then I went to the, in between, I had to make money. Okay. And I heard about this program. I was a logger. I was doing...
I never met a logger in person. Have you ever met a logger, Drew?
No, but luckily he's all his fingers and toes still. Congratulations for making it.
Yeah, I mean, I had to. We actually did Cedar Salvage in Ucluelet, which is on Vancouver Island.
Is that in Canada or in
the
U.S.?
That's in Canada.
Okay. It's right near Seattle.
Right.
Yeah.
And I had to make a lot of money.
What does a logger do? They roll those logs down the road?
Hold on. Is that really what we hear about? So you're successful because you had a short stint as a logger.
Yes. I had a short stint
as a logger.
You
made a lot of money.
I made a lot of money. And then I could actually come back to graduate school.
Good.
And then from graduate school, I wasn't freelancing. I never thought about freelancing in photography because I wanted to keep my art pure. So at that time, each student at the Visual Studies Workshop in Rochester, New York, we had to do what was called work-study. Mm-hmm. And I did some carpentry.
Of course you did, because you had logging background.
I have
carpentry
logging background.
Right,
it's a little different. That's a chainsaw as opposed to a hammer.
You were one with the wood at that point.
I was one with wood.
There you go.
Yeah, one with Woody.
Yeah,
that was good, Drew.
Thanks, Joanne.
And then when I came to New York, I had to do something. What do most artists do when they come to New York? They either work as plumbers or contractors.
Or waiters.
Or bartenders.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And I started working as a contractor, as an independent carpenter.
Oh, yeah?
And while I was actually doing a lot of these different jobs, I would be grinding and sanding away with my
tools.
With my tools, and I realized this: I could actually apply these tools and perpetrate these acts against the book. And right. that's where it actually started.
Oh, yeah.
So I worked as a carpenter for, you know, a few years, and then I got this great gig as an artist in residence at in Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota. And there they gave me a lot of money, and I thought, you know what? Money isn't so bad.
No, yeah. Well, money makes the world go round. That's fantastic. Unfortunately.
I think a lot of people have the same sentiment. When, you know, once people just start throwing money at them, they really do enjoy it.
Well, I realize that if I'm not doing my work, it's because I don't have enough money.
Of course.
And it was there. It was really a transition. When I came back to New York, I saw that my friends, my fine art photography friends, and they were actually doing very well. They were freelancing in photography, and I began to learn the business of photographing artwork.
Oh.
And when I started photographing artwork, I really enjoyed it because I could look at other artists' uh-huh. work. I started teaching in New York as well, and then I transitioned to photography freelance work of photographing special events such mm-hmm. as weddings, bar mitzvahs. And what I enjoyed about doing that for probably about 10 years is people did not want me to do schlocky stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
So even doing that particular job, whether it was carpentry or freelance photography, I applied those skills to my artwork.
Right.
So there's always this immediate recognition and transition from working in a menial job to something that was very creative, especially the photography. Yeah.
So they appreciate the actual artistic side that you're adding to it.
They said to me, they would look at my circus work, they'd look at my...
Wait, circus work?
Step back to circus. You missed that one.
We skipped
that one.
We missed the circus. Go back to the circus.
Wait, you were in the circus.
Well, I was in the circus in 1976. Actually, the year before I worked for Minor White, I had two grants from the Canada Council grant to travel with the circus and photograph circuses.
That's amazing.
That's when I put together a portfolio.
So you were in the traveling circus.
So the idea here is artists survive the best way they can.
That's right.
So I didn't have the money to travel, so I applied for a grant. Now, a lot of grants have washed up now.
Yes.
Unless you're a very well-known artist, then you can get those grants. And by that time, you probably don't need to get the grants. Yeah. It's when you're developing, and unfortunately, a lot of us or a lot of people who younger artists can't get them.
Right.
So what do? You have to learn a skill.
Yeah.
And that's why I learned carpentry. I learned freelance photography.
Wait, what did you do at the circus? I'm still
at the circus.
What did you do in the circus, Doug?
My job. This is more important than anything.
I don't care about the rest anymore. Give me the circus.
So with the circus, my job was to photograph.
Oh, Doug, you let me down.
Wait, there's more to it.
Yeah, so my job was to photograph, but I drove the tent truck.
Of course he did. So he's a truck driver, a logger, a carpenter, a photographer, and a mixed media artist.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
What do you lay your hat on? What's your best skill?
Actually, the hat just turns around.
Yes. Oh, it does.
And I just move from one type of hat to another.
You're amazing.
There's not enough top.
You're amazing.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah.
I see why Joanne gave you all those compliments at the beginning of the show, because it just, you're done. You, uh-huh.
okay. So, but it is. It's survival. It's really learning how to have so many skills that if something is not, it's like a portfolio, but a portfolio of skills. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if one doesn't pan out, you have to be able to survive in order to do your artwork. There are so many reasons not to do artwork. Because you want to come to Roberta's, it's a great bar, and go drinking. But if you don't have enough money, you can't come here to go drinking.
Right.
I feel so one-dimensional at this point.
Yeah.
Doug is
but
just
confounded. But you're only 30. It's time. You can launch.
Thanks, Timmy, for throwing that out there, too.
Yeah.
I'm confounded. How many jobs have you had by the time you're
30? Most people
at
our age have had a long list of interesting backgrounds.
Right.
So let's go back to somewhere along the line, you bought some real estate.
Well, what happened is from the freelance, well, actually just before buying the building that I bought in Fort Greene.
Yeah.
I was working as a curator of the Dal Gallery, one of the first Soho galleries in photography, in 1987, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met the man who started this artist book collection, Alan Chazanoff.
Yeah.
And Alan and I had known each other, but we never knew that each of us was interested in book works and transforming the book.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were doing the book work already?
I was already doing it.
Were doing photography plus book work.
Right. In the early... when I go to school? In the
80s, middle 80s.
In the early 80s when I started working with artist books.
Yes.
I was doing that. And Alan said through his curator of another collection, he said, his name was Ray. Ray said, look, why don't you talk to Alan? I said, no one's going to buy my books. Mm. No one's interested in my work. This is 1992. I said, I burn my books.
So you really
haven't
sold anything at that point.
Well, I've sold a little, but really nothing to the extent.
Right.
And Alan looks at the work. He said, I'm starting this collection. So Alan bought many thousands of dollars worth of work. I mean, I was...
You must have been dancing down
dancing.
Soho. Yeah.
I was dancing down
Soho. Yeah, sure.
So people were just throwing money at you left and right, apparently.
Well, at that time.
They had the College of Charleston, the one in Minnesota.
Right.
What was that school?
Carleton College.
Carleton College threw money at you.
Yeah.
Then you come back to New York, more people throw money at you. Doug... This is just shit luck. I think I don't see the skill involved yet.
Wait! It keeps going.
So anyway, Alan buys a lot of work, and I put that money away. I invest that money, and I'm freelancing in photography. And in 1998, the owner of my building said he's got to sell the building.
You were a renter at the
time. I was a renter for 10 years in that building. And it just hit at the right time. I had credit cards. I made sure when I was in Carleton College, I knew that I had some money and that I could actually get credit cards. So I strategized about how to develop my credit.
You took care of your financial life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew that if I wasn't doing my artwork financially, I wasn't going to be happy.
Yeah.
Because this and something else that I... And the reason is it came from experience. Before I went to Carleton College, I was very depressed. I literally had $100 in my pocket in 1989.
Yeah.
And I thought, how am I going to do my artwork? How am I going to do anything? And then, out of the blue, I get this call from Carleton College.
Yes.
And they say, we want you to teach a course.
Yes. I'm going back to the luck thing. The rags to riches story is just unparalleled here, Doug. I think you have a movie in the making as well.
Well, he did the book. I don't know. Are they going to make this a movie? We'll see.
I haven't been able to read the book yet, but based on what you're telling me now in this short half-hour stint, I think you have a movie in the making. We may dramatize a little
bit. Wait, let's go to the real estate now.
The real estate, I lucked out as well.
This is...
But now you did use your
95% of New York City can't afford real estate.
Well,
he bought
it
in a dicey neighborhood
It was still considered in Fort Greene in 1998, was still considered transitional.
And it was a house that needed help?
Yeah, I had to do a renovation as well.
But because you're a carpenter and you have some skills, he could use that.
I was a general contractor.
But you had been there for 10 years already.
Yeah, so I knew what I was getting into.
Yeah.
And I lucked out because I have tenants now. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, my tenants, I love my tenants because that allows me to...
pay your mortgage.
Pay my mortgage. And then I still teach. I teach at Parsons, the new school. I teach a photography book class. And I sell my work. And I have other stuff going on.
Of course.
Sometimes I'm up for some grants right now, et cetera. Nice. But I don't count on that.
All right. I'm impressed.
No kidding. That's why I brought him on the show.
I want to back my way to success like Doug Beer has.
Let me just say something. Now that we have a concise picture of your financial and your art life, what could you give the young people who are struggling right out of college, debating, well, I got to make some money. Mm-hmm. I want to be true to my art. Give them something.
It's a great question because I'd love to teach a class in this and invite various artists who've actually struggled from not having any money to being comfortable, or comfortable to us is very relative.
That's right.
Because to my parents, perhaps they think of me
as a poor kid. Yes.
But the building's worth a lot of money.
Yes.
What happens really is. To put the ego aside, if you really want to support your work, one does have to become a waiter or waitress. You do need to do work for $10, $12 an hour.
Right. Drive a truck.
Whatever it takes to support your work.
Correct.
And to learn as many skills.
But don't give up on your work.
No.
Odd jobs add to your skill set?
Absolutely. Cutting the grass for my dad, it actually, what it did is it taught me that
to concrete your backyard.
Well, thank you.
Great, because that's expensive and coming out of pocket. But anyway.
No, the idea is that as many skills as possible, even web design and these more contemporary skills, rather than being a waiter or a logger.
Yes.
But aren't you worried that if you take on something like web design where you can impart some of your artistic side to it, that it may seem to take over your creative side, and then you fall apart from
lots
your,
of times
you
it
fall
does.
Away from your artwork.
Yes.
And that, do you think it's better to have these arbitrary or menial jobs in order to keep you hungry for
absolutely.
Your...
I don't agree.
You don't agree.
I think that, you know, you're just going to have to be true to yourself. You can have a
but
web...
But it's hard. Once you start making money...
Of course it's hard.
Once this money starts coming in,
hard.
As Doug has said, it's hard to keep focused on what your true dream is.
Absolutely.
And,
it
you know,
is hard.
It,
but you,
you
know
it
what? If you love
wayside.
Your art, mm-hmm. if you love your art, you're gonna say, okay, it's worth me having to do...
But
life
gets in the way, Joanne.
Yes, I know.
Life does. They make movies about things like this.
And most people abandon their love of their art and they go on to become a normal citizen.
Right.
Normal, normal is.
And that's very true because I have friends who could no longer do the work because
they couldn't
afford their family.
It. Right.
However, when you're young and you're single or if you're connected with someone, you can still work and still do your work. But it's, you know,
it's harder and harder.
Many of us, we would come home at night after working a menial labor job.
Right.
And on the weekends, you have to be totally devoted. Yes. Otherwise, right. There are too many outtakes.
Distractions.
And distractions.
Okay, so we've run out of time. But Doug, tell them one more time, your name and book, where they can get it, because it's a fabulous, beautiful book.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Doug. Uh-huh.
Anyway, the book is called Doug Bube, Breaking the Codex, and you can go to my website, which is www.dougbube.com. And Joanne, thanks for having me on the show. This was a lot of fun.
No kidding. And everybody's got to look at this book. It's just a beauty. So we're going to sign off now, and we'll be back next week. Thank you, Doug. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.